Welcome back, Ruby Tuesday.
As always, I'm Patrick Ruby of Sports on Earth. Today's guest is a good one, Kai Allums. He is an advocate. Now, I've seen him identified as an advocate for transgender people, but I'm pretty sure his advocacy goes beyond that. Kai also was the first publicly transgender person to play NCAA Division I basketball. He actually played right here where I live in D.C., over at George Washington University. Oh. Kai, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's been a long day. You know, it's a nice way to end it.
I'm sure. So let me tell you, there's two big reasons I want to have you on. The first is really simple, which is I don't know enough about what it's like to be transgender, what kind of unique challenges you face in life. And that also means I don't know enough about what it's like for athletes who identify as transgender. And I'm pretty sure inside and outside the media boat, I'm not the only person who doesn't know enough. now, you laugh, but I'm serious. Secondly, in the last couple of weeks, I've realized, and this is a little more serious, that not knowing can be hurtful to people and like maybe even dangerous. And I say that because, as a lot of people listening probably know, the website Grantland published a story the other week about an unusual golf putter and the inventor of that putter. And while I don't want to rehash the whole piece here, in case you haven't heard, basically the inventor of the putter, a woman nicknamed Dr. V, has some discrepancies in her work resume. Now, she also happened to be transgender and had previously attempted suicide in her life. Now, sadly, she took her own life a few months before the Grantland story was published. A lot of people took exception to the story. They took exception to the fact that it was published at all. They took exception to the fact that the author outed Dr. V as transgender to one of her investors. And they took exception to Grantland having what seemed like a really big blind spot when it came to what transgender people have to deal with and go through in life. Now, I had some thoughts of my own in the story, and there's some things that struck me right away as serious problems. But I really want to get your take first. And the reason is I read a piece you published last week at The Nation. And you said reading that Grantland piece was a struggle for you, that it made you feel angry and sad and even worthless. And I think it's, at one point you were in tears reading it. Can you take me through and explain why it provoked those feelings?
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be difficult. But I mean, it's the article was a it was like deja vu, honestly. Just reading it, it just reminded me, like I mentioned in the article, when I was asked to be on ESPN, and same type of thing. The guy who was interviewing me and putting together this piece, he was going to use pictures of me when I was younger and video footage. They said my old name. They showed my coming out letter to my mother. You know, all these things I didn't even know until the day before. And I called and asked, similar to Dr. V calling Caleb, and I asked him, I said, I don't feel comfortable with you using any of these images, any of this. And, you know, he was kind of just like, you know, it's not a big deal. If this was anybody else, you know, they wouldn't care. And my whole thing is like, whether I was trans or not, this is my life. This is my story. I get that this is your job, you know, and this is what you're supposed to do. But if I'm telling you that I'm not comfortable with this, that's it, you know?
Right.
And he then continued to, they published it. And the reason why, you know, it brought up tears was because for that entire week that it aired, like I literally every single day that it would air, or someone would come up to me saying, oh, hey, I saw that piece, you know, with your story. It was amazing. You know, every time I heard that, I wanted to take my own life. I did. I was thinking about it constantly because my life was not in my, it wasn't in my hands. And everyone, all these people who saw it, millions of people got to see personal information of mine that I never wanted anyone to see. And there was nothing I could do about it, you know?
So it wasn't so much like that it sounds like most people reacted positively. People were trying to be supportive, but
people reacted positively. Yes. Because they, it's, it's that's we're used to creating, you know, stories or documentaries and put, you know, people's pictures in it. Mm-hmm. You know, you put you want to, you know, make it entertaining for everyone else. But mm-hmm. but you can be, you can entertain people in many ways. I speak all across the country about being trans, and I don't use PowerPoint. You know, I use my personality. I use me. I'm up there and we dance, we have fun, we got music. There's different ways of entertaining people. And so that was my whole thing, is that it did not need to happen. It's just, I think we're just used to, you know, creating certain things a certain way when there's always another way.
Is there something about, you know, is that common? Again, I don't want to make you feel like you have to speak for all trans people, because that'd be ridiculous. But
yeah,
you know,
would
among the trans people, you know,
mm-hmm.
Do you find that that's a somewhat common thing where sort of stuff from your life before transitioning, whether it's pictures, whether it's information, whatever it might be, can that be sort of like a very emotional kind of thing of like, I don't necessarily want that being out in the world. Maybe I don't even want to see it that much myself. I'm just kind of wondering, because I think all of us, probably trans, non-trans, whatever, we can probably relate to there being certain things in our life that we want to keep private.
Exactly.
But I'm curious, if is that something that is commonly like something where you really want to keep it private? If it's not private, it's actually very emotionally damaging.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to, with my friends that I know, whether they're trans or not, I have a lot of friends who are trans and who aren't. And mm-hmm. amongst all of them, you know, some of them don't mind sharing personal things from their past, and right. others do. It depends on the person. It's not a trans thing. This is a person thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are more open than others. Like, I'm a very open person, but there are certain things about my life that I just don't want to share. And that's a Kai thing. And that's okay.
Sure.
But I think that a lot of people within the media, when they hear that word trans, it's like the whole person thing goes out the window. And it's like, oh, great. So let me just ask you, let me just do whatever I want because I want to do it. And I don't feel like it's not bothering me. You know, I don't feel like this is a crazy thing, so I'm just going to do it, even though you don't want me to, you know, but, yeah, it's a person thing. It's not just a trans thing. So everyone's different. You know?
Sure. Now you were a basketball player. You were a really good high school basketball player. I assume you're someone that got at some level had some public attention, some media attention before coming out at GW with being trans. I'm curious, did that...
I was never out as trans in high school.
Right. Did the attention that you got just as being an athlete at all compare or prepare you for the attention you got at GW? The attention you got, like, through that ESPN-type piece, things like that? Or was it a totally different kind of experience?
You just about compared to high school and college?
Just the getting attention from the media, because I sometimes think, you know, if you're an athlete... Like mm-hmm. you were talking earlier about how it's sort of like when the media is like, oh, well, you're trans, well, then I'm just going to focus on that and sort of like view you and treat you through that spectrum. I always wonder, athletes in general, if they kind of feel like we in the media come along and all we want to do is really focus on them as basketball players or whatnot. And I'm mm-hmm. just curious if the experiences you had with one prepared you or were similar to the experience you had with the other.
Yeah, I mean, well... I mean, I wouldn't say that I feel like, because I can learn from any experience. I take every experience is a learning experience. And so I have, you know, prior to coming out, I did do a lot of work with the media. You know, I did do interviews after games, before games. And that aspect of it did prepare me somewhat, you know, for just speaking to the media and things like that. But in terms of preparing me for, you know, questions like, oh, do you have a penis or do you have a vagina? Do you want to get surgery? When is that date? Things like that. Of course, it didn't prepare me for anything like that. Life prepared me for things like that.
Right. Did people in the media come out and ask you stuff like that, like right away?
Absolutely. Yeah. Those are basic questions, you know,
sure.
Just like, oh, hey, Kai. Yep. So do you have a penis yet? Did you want to get that? Are you attracted to your teammates? Like, of course, all those things have to do with basketball, right?
Right.
No, they don't.
Right. No. But I mean, no, I'm being sarcastic. What I mean is, though, like, I'm sure part of you can understand almost that, like, okay, well, people are just curious because it's something they don't understand. But on the other hand, it's like, wow, like, could you be a little more sensitive or think about a way to Like, if you were in my shoes, maybe you wouldn't want to be asked that.
Well, I mean, like, the thing about, like, this, when I say trans, like, be honest, what's the first three things that comes to mind when you hear transgender?
For me?
Yeah, like just to say, before you, like, even, you know, thought it, like, knew what it was, what are the first three things that comes to mind?
Well, for me, being someone with, like, sort of a sports media background, I think I'd think a little bit about Renee Richards, whose story, by the way, I didn't really know a lot about until a few years ago. And actually found very interesting and very moving, honestly. Outside of that, I like I said, I honestly, I'm pretty ignorant. I don't know a lot about how, two things. I don't know a lot about, like, how it feels, like, what the sort of emotions and psychology are. And really, if that's all that different than anything else that everybody else goes through, I imagine in some ways it's not, but I imagine in some ways it is. I guess something else I would think was, like, I would just assume, like, wow, like, it's probably a lot tougher, like, living in society, because that seems to be something where I would assume there's maybe not yet a ton of acceptance or a ton of understanding. I don't know. I'm just guessing. I don't know. For a third thing, I'm not really sure. Like I said, I would say I'm pretty ignorant of it. And like I said, that's one of the reasons I want to have you on, because I think I'm realizing that's not a good thing. You know, it's not benign to be ignorant.
Yeah, I mean, well, my whole thing is, a lot of people, when they hear trans, at least when I ask them, the first thing that comes to mind is, like, the body parts. They think about that. They think about, you know, or who are you attracted to? How does that work? They always go to body. And my whole thing is, like, the way I define being trans, it's simply defining who you are. But you need to be mindful that just because someone defines who they are does not mean that they are going to identify as being trans. Mm-hmm. And so if you really thought about it like that, you know, now what are you going to think about? Oh, this is someone who's defining themselves? Great. Tell me about yourself. You know, like, every transgender person is different. Everyone's experience is going to be different. You know, who they want to be is different. And in reality, we're just like anyone else. We're all different, you know? Just because I want to use this pronoun, it doesn't make me any more or less of a human. You know, it just means that my name is Kai and I'm using male pronouns. You know, what I want to do with my body is my business. If I want to share it with you, I will, you know? But I mean, it's at the end of the day, I'm a human, I'm a person.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's the place where, because you wrote that the media has ignorance here. And as someone, again, I can't speak for the whole media anymore. You can speak for the whole transgender community, but I'm sure there's a lot of ignorance. You also wrote that you're not a stranger to it. So I'm wondering, what doesn't the media know? And, you know, outside of the experience you have at ESPN, I'm curious, what kind of, in what ways are you not a stranger to that?
I mean, the media doesn't know how to speak to a transgender person. The media doesn't know how to write about a transgender person. And I'm just being general. Of course, there are some people like Sid Ziegler or Christina Carl or Pablo Torre. They're great writers who are great with reporting about transgender people. And they are great because they would come to me. They would come to other trans people and they would say, hey, I'm not expert, just like you're doing, right? I'm not expert. I'm ignorant. I don't know, you know, where to start. You tell me, what are we talking about? How do I talk about you? Look, they would come back after they would write their articles and say, can you double check this? If I messed up, you know, I will tweak it. You just let me know. And I know that's not always, you know, you can't always do that. Mm-hmm. But with these people, they were following our lead. You know, and I'm talking about my own experience. They were following my lead. They were not trying to tell me who I was. They were not just doing things because they felt that it was right. And I don't think that journalists I don't think that journalists should only be asking transgender people who they are. I think that they should set a precedent for how they talk to everyone. And I think they should just be asking everyone who they are. And you know what I mean? And going about it that way.
I think it's the same empathy that you would show as a journalist to anyone you're writing about, profiling.
Exactly.
Particularly if you know that, I mean, we all have places where we're very emotionally sensitive. And I think going in as a journalist, you always try to know what those places are going to be, and if not, you try to find out, because obviously you want to tell a story, you want to tell the truth about something, but you also don't want to unnecessarily hurt somebody by something you write or publish.
Yeah,
I think most people, that's a concern.
Yeah, and one thing that has been brought to my attention is I was actually doing a panel with Wade Davis and Michael A. Oh, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He writes a lot for Ebony. Okay. But we were doing a panel for journalists in Orlando, and once someone asked, they were like, how do you ask that question? They felt like it would, would I be offensive if I asked someone, what pronouns do you use? Like, how do you go about doing that? What I would say, a great tool that I use is simply introducing myself first. So coming up to the person saying, hey, my name's Kai. I use male pronouns. What's your name? What pronouns do you use? And saying it, with a smile, saying it nicely. And right. If someone looks at you like, oh, well, why are you asking me that? That's a great learning moment to now say, oh, well, not everybody uses, he, she, not everyone uses male or female pronouns. Some people use X. Some people use they. Some people use Y. Some people make up their own. So, I just want to be very respectful. So that's why I'm asking you, and going about it that way. And there you go. And then asking what you need to know, not what you want to know.
Okay. Break down the difference there in terms of need and want.
Because
I'm saying, as someone who's been in journalism for a while, what I need to know, what I want to know often are the same thing. And they're in service of what I'm trying to do as a story. Yeah. And that's me thinking as a professional, sometimes maybe thinking more as a professional information gatherer than even as a empathetic person, which you always try to be both, obviously. But sometimes those things can be at odds,
Yeah, well, in terms of like what you need to know, we're talking about trans people. So right. if you, let's say you were about to do, let's say I was back in college, right? I'm playing basketball and you want to interview me about a game I did. You do not need to know anything about my body parts, anything about my surgery or my hormones, and anything, unless you are doing a story about that. If you want to do a story about that, that's another thing. But if it has nothing to do with that, if you're going to interview me about a game, then do that. Or if you want to go back to Dr. V, that article, the majority of it was about the invention, right? So like we could have left it at that. There was no need to talk about anything else that she didn't want to talk about. Again, of course, you know what I mean? Like
Well, let me ask you on that Dr. V article. I mean, what about, because I think there might be another sort of line here, because what if you're doing that article? Because I've heard a lot of people talk about it, and I'm somewhat sympathetic to part of the view that, okay, her sort of work and credential background, which was seemingly kind of mysterious and hard to pin down, and maybe it seemed like in some places might have been exaggerated, maybe not. It was very hard for the author to tell. The author seemed to try and do their due diligence, and it did, to me, it seemed relevant because it factored in then to the design of this putter. Who's behind this putter? What makes this putter better? What kind of experience do they bring to that kind of industrial design? To me as a journalist, that stuff, I hate to use this term, but it seemed like sort of, I don't want to say fair game, but it seemed like a fair thing to explore and write about in the context of a story about a putter and who's behind it. I felt like when people started saying, but you could do that and leave out transgender status, that also seemed pretty reasonable to me. Those two things didn't seem necessarily mutually exclusive, and I almost wonder if like sort of one of the places where the story took a sort of thinking and editorial turn for the worse was in kind of conflating those two things, like someone's entire background and life story is all part of the same thing when maybe it not always is. Does that make sense, or am I going way off the reservation there?
It kind of makes sense. I mean, my thoughts. I mean, I'm going back to the whole differentiating between need and want.
Right.
To clear that up, after thinking about it for a second, to determine what you need and want, I'd say it comes from who you're interviewing, and I think that determines who's a great interviewer. You know what I mean? It's like people. The reporters that have worked with me, or the journalists that have the writers that have worked with me that I love the most, are the ones that do that. And they come to me and they say, okay, Kai, you tell me what I need to know. And I'll tell you, right? Mm-hmm. Dr. V told him what he needed to know. And she said, I do not, can you please not publish this? I do not feel comfortable. What did he do? He did it anyway, because he did what he thought you know, he needed to know.
Right.
But she let him know, and so did some of the other friend, right, who she had also talked to, who had warned him and said, you know, yeah, she doesn't want you to focus on the scientist. She wants you to focus on the science. And he didn't listen. And so how do you figure out what you need and what to know? You ask the person you're interviewing, because it's their story, it's their life. It's your job to take that and turn whatever they give you into an entertaining story. If you can't do that, then maybe you should get a different job, you know? I mean, I know I'm being harsh, but like it's
No, I hear you. This is why I'm asking these questions. This is a perspective I want, you know? This is very valuable. Yeah. Yeah, one thing I would say also about that, the other thing, just I don't want to can just talk about this story the whole time, but one thing I wanted to throw in there, because here's something that I think definitely transcends any particular sensitivities you have when you're dealing with a story that involves a trans person, which is, I think if you're writing about someone and either they start to seem incredibly emotionally distressed, or you learn that they have suicide attempts in their background, or especially, and here's where I'm really blown away, when you're working on something and the subject or one of the subjects of your piece sadly commits suicide, I feel like that's definitely a moment where, as a human and as a journalist, you have to step back and think about, okay, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Am I still writing a story? And if I am, is the story still about a golf putter at this point? Because I actually think, and this is going to sound really weird, I think that if at that point the people working on the story had felt, okay, we need to really write a story about a person here, like, and really write it, and what happened here, and how, I mean, I don't think it would have been good from the standpoint of, like, someone died, but it might have been good from the standpoint of there'd be some understanding and some empathy and some compassion, and maybe if you had, there had been more of that from the start, wouldn't have ended up at this place. You know, it's hard for me to sort of figure out, but it just sort of, I remember reading the story and just being sort of almost hypnotized to the point of, at the end of the piece, I was like, wait, there was a suicide? Like, what? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was just kind of like, what happened? Like,
yeah.
And then it almost felt like an afterthought. And that's what really creeped me out. Again, I don't have the experience of feeling like, what you said, you know, my remembering a time when, like, a part of you is exposed to the public that you don't necessarily want, and it wasn't your choice, and how terrifying that can be. I didn't get that feeling reading it, but I definitely at the end was like, oh my God, this person killed themselves, and we're not really talking about that.
Exactly. And after I, like, it took me forever to read the article. Like, I kept going in and out, because I knew, I was like, I didn't want people to see my ESPN thing. I'm like, and she didn't want people to read that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here and I'm having to read it. And I'm like, this was an afterthought. I'm like, so does that mean that, you know, had I killed myself, would I have been an afterthought? And you know what I mean?
It's painful. That's
our really transgender painful people. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, it's going to admit, you know what I mean? Oh, it's like we're not even valued, you know? And it's like this just boils down to humanity. Like,
right.
like we're all humans. Like, listen. The answers were there. Like she was, like I said, like she was saying it. I was saying it. Like we're telling you.
Right.
You know, I think it's just being a nice person, right? Just be a person who's just gonna sit there and listen and just write a great article, you know?
Right.
Like, and I'm still mad that it's still up. They need to take it down, honestly. Like you do not need to have an article up for an article like that to hold as an example. I can make you an example. I'll write you another article. I'll write you something. It does not have to be her actual story that she didn't want, or that piece of her story that she didn't want out there. You know, that's what's really pissing me off.
The fact that it's still up, does that in any way, does that sort of invalidate the apology they put up or the explanation they put up? Or does it,
I mean,
does
I
sit
get,
next
I,
to that?
I get why he, you know, he said he wants to leave it up as an example. And I think that in his mind or in their mind, they really believe that this is, you know, going to be an example. But I don't understand how you could see, like, I don't understand how you could think that. Like, she literally, it's in the article. She said, don't do it. And they're still doing it, you know? So, I mean, the apology, I don't know. I don't even know. I don't know. All I know is they just need to take it down. I don't care. I don't care whether they think whatever they're thinking at the moment. I honestly don't care. I just really want them to take it down. I do.
Well, like I said, I don't want to spend the whole time we talk on that article. I do want to ask you about suicide, though, because that's something I've learned in the last 2 weeks. You asked me before, what are the three things you think of transgender people? Well, I had no idea that there's such a serious and large problem for transgender people. And I just mean in terms of statistically, the rate of attempted and this is not the right word, the rate of attempted and sort of, I guess, completed suicide, I don't know how to say it in any kind of non-morbid way, is shockingly high. And that's something I have to ask you from your experiences, with your own feelings, from your work as an advocate, from your reading, from your living, just everything, can you put a finger on some of the general reasons that those numbers are so high? Because to me, that's a problem. Like, all of us in society need to know why that's the case. So hopefully all of us can at least do a little something about it.
I can't speak for anybody else, period. But I mean, I can always speak for Kai. So I'm not really going to talk about, why it's as high as it is. But I mean, just being a trans person in this world is not easy. You know, you wake up and I'm constantly having to validate my own worth, because people don't understand. They don't see, a trans person as being a human. We're disposable. Trans people are being brutally murdered, chopped up, thrown into rivers, and it's like, whatever, it's not even being covered, widely. And why, what kind of message is that sending to me? Is it sending to everyone else in the trans community? And it's saying, we don't care. And that's,
you don't
that's,
count. Like,
yeah, we don't care. You don't count. You're not valuable. And so why should I feel how can I feel like I'm important, enough to live here and to be here what space is there for trans people in sports? What space is there for trans people in bathrooms? What space is there for trans people in a mall or when you're shopping? Everything is so, black and white in this world. So where do we fit? And it's because we don't fit. It makes it like, because I don't fit, there's no place for me. I feel like I have felt like I shouldn't be here. But in doing this work that I do, I've spoken to so many kids around this country, mm-hmm. and around the world, and they inspire me. They have helped me realize that I have a place in this world. I'm here for a reason. If I wasn't placed on this earth, I'm here. I'm here, and I need to keep fighting, so that other people, younger people before me, or people now, so that we have a place, so that we do fit.
That ties to something you wrote where you said, I'm going to quote you. You said, this is in the Nation piece.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick and tired of the transgender identity being portrayed as if it's something we should all be afraid of. I'm not a monster. I'm a human being.
Mm-hmm.
I am enough.
Mm-hmm.
When you personally have told people that you're trans.
Yeah.
Or people know that about you one way or the other. Do you find that personally, like, that there's a fear factor there? Do people seem afraid of you? Have people told you, I was afraid of you, or I am afraid of you, or maybe at some point I felt that until I saw it, I didn't need to be, you know what I'm saying? Like, have you experienced that personally?
Yes, people fear what they don't understand. There are plenty of people who don't understand me, mm-hmm. and who don't understand me being trans, who don't understand Kai in general as a person. And that causes fear. All I can do is tell you who I am. All I can do is live my life, and that's what I continue to try to do every single day. But yeah, absolutely.
Do you see any sort of like generalized or broader fears in society that sort of generally apply to trans people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on, trans women, trans men, but I think mm-hmm. trans women get the brunt of all of the crap And a lot of people, you know, will sit here and say, oh, you know, because you're a trans woman, you must be a pedophile, or you must be, you know, a sex worker, or you must, you know, you're crazy or whatever. You're just really just a man. You're a fake woman, you know, all this bullshit. I'm sorry, but
no, like, that's honest talk. It's okay. If they need to be beeped out, it'll be beeped out. So don't worry about it. Someone goes over stuff.
Cool. But I mean, it's we're human, you know, we're human. and there are many men and women come in different packages. Mm-hmm. Transgender people are defining, we're defining who we are. You know, this there's no reason to be afraid or be shameful of liking a trans woman or liking a trans man or being friends with someone who is transgender, because in the end, all you're doing is being with somebody who is being who they are.
Right.
That's it. And just because there isn't much trans visibility in the media yet, doesn't mean that when you meet a trans person in person, doesn't give you the right to, you know, hurt them or to treat them, you know, unfairly or to say that they don't know who they are, that they're crazy or that they're confused. We know who we are. just you know, have a conversation with us and ask someone, you know, who are you? Because everyone's different and everyone's human.
Well, when you talk about BS a second ago, and I'll try and make it so they don't have to necessarily edit there. What kind of BS have you had to deal with as trans that maybe you didn't have to deal with when you were younger and hadn't identified yourself that way publicly out to people? Is there a sort of a new level of crap you have to put up with in life?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm gonna go back to your question. So when you said,
and I might be using the wrong terms here. I'm not sure. Yeah, I might be stumbling around.
Yeah, I'm trying to help you or educate everybody. But like, so when you said, what kind of or what did I experience when I was trans? So you would say, what did I experience when I was as a trans person, you know, or with the trans identity, you know?
Yeah, the trans identity versus when you didn't have a trans identity and you're younger and people aren't going to be reacting to you that way. I'm just curious, like, what kind of stuff do you deal? What kind of challenges now pop up that weren't there before?
Yeah, I mean, well, now it's now it's having to deal with, you know, is this person educated? Are they not educated? Do I have to have a PowerPoint at the bar? Yes, I probably do before I ask them out on a date. Do I tell them now? Do I not tell them now? Have they been with a trans person? Have they not been with a trans person? You know, it's there are many struggles. You know,
that's already an awkward situation for everybody,
right?
And now you have like a whole layer of awkwardness you have to like muddle your way through.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I mean, it depends on, like, you know, where I'm at. You know, what's the situation? You know, am I at work? Am I trying to date somebody? Am I on a subway? Am I in a safe neighborhood? You know, I mean, it's all these different things that depend. You know, am I passing that day? You know, am I walking to like a gay man? Am I walking with a white person and not a black person? Is it a guy? Is it a girl? You know, all these things change how people will, you know, treat me or react to me. God, I lost my train of thought.
No, I'm not surprised, because that seems like a lot of, to put it in sports terms, a lot of situational awareness you have to have at all times.
Yeah.
Maybe more.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I feel like that mentally, that might be a little tiring sometimes.
It gets to be exhausting. It does.
Am I understating it if I say it that way?
Yes. It is. It can be very tiring, you know, and then you have to deal with people rejecting you, you know, and feeling like you're not loved. I know so many trans people right now who have come to me and asked me, you know, does love exist for trans people?
That is the saddest thing I've ever heard. Honestly.
Exactly. You know, but it's a reality. It's a sad reality, but it's a reality, because a lot of times, you know, we might meet someone, but they might, you know, after getting to know us, they might not want to be with us because they can't be with someone who does not fit the mold that is already in their mind, you know, or because they're afraid of what they think trans is or for whatever reason, you know, but that rejection is still real and it still exists. And it's painful. You know, it's not easy to have someone reject you just because of who you are, because you're not agreeing with how society sees you. I'm agreeing with how I see myself, and that's not enough. You know, so what is it saying about me? Am I not okay? You know, is it not okay for me to love me? And it's hard because now I have to re-energize myself. I have to keep, you know, fighting, keep moving on, and keep telling myself, you know, you're fine, Kai, you're good, you're human, and it's exhausting. It really is. But that's why I do what I do. That's why I educate. That's why we're having this conversation, is so that other people can see that it's all right to love a trans person. It's okay to love yourself. It's okay to be friends with us because we're humans who just define who we are, you know?
I mean, you know, you mentioned a word, Sango. You mentioned and a sort of a concept and really an emotional state, a painful emotional state, rejection, which I think everybody is familiar with that feeling in life. And actually, I think that's one of the things that all of us are probably the most afraid of in life, and we do a lot of stuff to avoid it in our daily lives. All of us, you know what I mean? I don't care what your background is, what your identity is. Like, we all hate that, and I think we all, like, kind of rig our lives to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's also a lot of, not just the actual bad feeling of being rejected, but all the sort of, like, negative anticipation and fear that goes into the idea that I might be rejected in a certain situation. I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned also fear earlier, and what we talked about, how other people can be afraid if you're trans. But if you are trans, I feel like don't you have to deal with a lot of fear too? Maybe you have to deal with more fear.
Fear in terms of what? Like fear of
being rejected, fear of how people are going to treat you, how they're going to react to you, all that kind of stuff. Like kind of what you were saying.
That's what I was saying, you know, like yes, we deal with that on a daily basis, right? Like when I wake up in the morning, you know, I wake up and I have to figure out, okay, am I gonna wear this white shirt or a black shirt? Probably a black shirt, because if I wear a white shirt, then, you know, people might see this part of my body that I don't want them to see, and then they might question me, and then I might, you know, they might beat me up, or maybe they won't. I don't even know. Now when I get up, I leave my house, I'm walking down the sidewalk, people are staring at me. Do they think I'm cute? Do they think that I'm trans? Do they want to bite me? Like, what's, like, I don't even know. But it's. Yes, people are fearing for their lives. Why? Because we're being killed. We're being killed simply for being who we are, and it's not okay. It's not okay.
No, I that's definitely not okay.
No, I'm just you know.
Yeah,
I'm just,
no, it's good it's good for you to say that. I want to add sort of another layer to this, which is transgender athlete. You know, like I said, in your case, you're a very good athlete. You're like a star high school basketball player, and at GW you starred 20 games as a sophomore. That's pretty good. I'm not necessarily putting you in the Olympics, but you were a good player.
I saw
a couple of highlights. I saw a nice full court layup going there. It was pretty smooth. So what I'm wondering is when you add athlete to the mix.
Yeah.
What are the unique challenges that you face? Because I have to think there are some unique challenges that go beyond just the stuff you face as an athlete.
Yeah, I mean, well, for me, I mean, because I was on a team sport, you know, I had to deal with, okay, now I have other teammates. Now I have to go and tell them and explain to them what it means to be trans. You know, I have my coaches.
Can you take me back just quickly and how you did that? And I mean, if that's something you don't mind revisiting. I'm curious how that goes.
Oh, God. All right.
I mean, how did you sort of build up the – I think it would take courage. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it would take a lot of courage to do that.
I mean, yeah, of course. It definitely takes a lot of courage to come out and to say, you know, this is who I am. But for me, I was struggling a lot. I did not know what transgender meant until I was a freshman in college.
Really?
I learned about the term as I took a human sexuality class. And after I figured out what it was, I was like, oh, okay, well, this is me. You know, what can I do? What is my path to becoming, you know, me? Mm-hmm. And once I figured that out, I knew that I had to tell my teammates. And so I ended up coming out to one of my best friends on the team at the time, because I didn't want to come out to the whole team. That's a bit too much. You know, it's pressure. Mm-hmm. So I told her. She thought I was joking. And so for the next 2 weeks, I kind of just suppressed that. I was like, you know what? Maybe I am wrong. Maybe I don't know who I am. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that did change was after I told her, I began to count how many times people would misgender me and say she, her, and hers. and or say girl or say boo or anything that didn't fit well with me, I was counting it.
So
and
you,
I remember,
in your head, you were keeping like sort of a tally. Wow.
I had never done that before, but when I was doing it, I remember one day I got up to like 257, and
in
I was,
one day.
In one day, and I literally, and I was at practice. And I was just exhausted. And I was just, it was, I was like, if I get to 268, I don't even know, I think I said 67, two, if I get one more, I'm going to lose it.
You can go ham.
Like, yeah, you know, so somebody did
I'm
say
I'm not it. Taking that charge in practice at that point.
Somebody said it in practice, and I just flipped out. And my friend, who I told, came over to me, and she was like, you know, what's going on? You know, why are you looking like this? And I was like, I told you, like, I'm a guy, like, I'm a trans guy. I know it might not make sense, but I need you to use male pronouns. You know, if you could do that, I would appreciate it. You know, just say he, him, his. I know it sounds crazy, but when you use male pronouns and when you say Kai, it just makes me feel better.
You feel
and
comfortable.
I
feel like you.
Yeah, and you know, and I said that a lot more forcefully at the time. But after that, she got it. She was like, oh, I mean, why don't you just tell me, why don't you just say it like that in the first place? And I was like, oh, okay. And so after right. that, she ended up, you know, telling the rest of the team. And then everyone knew, you know. And then from that point, you know, not everyone got it and everyone liked it. Mm-hmm. But after the end of, you know, 3 months of you know, preseason in the or after summer workouts, we ended up, the whole entire team ended up using male pronouns and saying Kai. And they just got it, and they just, you know, embraced me as the brother of the team, and you know, we went from there. But even after they found out, or even after they knew and they were cool with it, I was still having issues with, you know, with traveling bathrooms, traveling bathrooms in the airports. So whenever we travel, I wouldn't drink anything because I didn't want to have to go into a bathroom and have someone see me and say, oh, you know, hi, miss, or hey, women's basketball team. You know, I just didn't want to be associated with that. So I didn't drink anything.
So you were just Bear Bryant Junction Boy yourself, like just parching yourself at airports.
Yeah. And as an athlete, that's not smart.
No,
it's not smart. It's not healthy. I did become dehydrated, and I
shouldn't chuckle, but that is somewhat funny of a story, to be honest.
I mean, it's that's something that I've heard from my other trans athletes.
Really?
That they would do that too, and I do not advise that. Please right. do not do that. If you are a trans athlete and you are not, you know, drinking anything, please Gatorade. Get that G2 in you. It's you know, it makes it it's healthy. It's smart. You need to stay hydrated. But yeah, that was one thing that I didn't do at all. It's because I felt extremely uncomfortable, and being in sure. in a bathroom or going in a women's bathroom, it was a trigger for me. And trigger meaning that it made me feel very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And uncomfortable to the point where I just
it brought those kind of those countdown emotions, it sounds like, or the tally emotions you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was one thing that I had to deal with. That you know, affected my health. But other than that, I mean, for the most part, everything was fine. You know, I went, you know, I played against other teams and in other arenas.
And you actually you had come out and at a press conference, right? Like even during the season or the start of the season early on?
Yeah, 2 weeks before the season started, mm-hmm. I came out. And you know, everyone was there. There's a lot of cameras, a lot of reporters. I came out, but back to your question, like in terms of like things that were
challenging.
Yeah, challenging. There wasn't too many. I mean, like, yeah, like I said, like I was playing at other schools. The most probably hate that I got was just a silent crowd. People just pointed, whispered, and that was it. Nobody really said anything. I actually got more negative talk and comments from fans or other people before I came out. Yeah, like when I my freshman year, my first game, I cut my hair and I got a mohawk. People used to always scream at me like, "Oh, you're a boy! You're a boy! You're a boy!" And I just wanted to be like, "I know."
Like, little did they know that you're like, oh, yeah, did you want to turn and do like the pro wrestling thing and like sort of gesture and like keep bringing it down?
Yeah, right. Like, but like, yeah, so that was I literally got more hate then than I did after, which is really surprising. But I honestly, I think that that's because when they saw me, they just saw another woman.
Right.
Saw this small girl who just is pretending to be a boy. And, oh, okay, that's fine, because we don't value female bodies. You know, we value male bodies. Had I been a trans woman, mm-hmm. oh, all hell would have broke loose. It'd be like, oh my God, he's a man and he's cheating and all this crap. And it's like, what? We act like, you know, we act like male body people are superheroes. Like they can do anything. You know, women are strong. I know plenty of women who could outbench, outrun, out a lot of things than a lot of men in this world. But it's sad that the society we live in, with the world that we live in, just caters to men, and we value men and male bodies and testosterone and all those things. But you know, for me, because I am a female body person, people didn't care. They didn't care, and it was like, all right, let's brush it off. You're still crazy. I don't understand, but you know, you have a female body, so it's fine.
So you kind of just blew my mind, because I think you're totally right, and I never thought about that way before. But you're right. I think you're right. If things had been reversed,
yeah, absolutely.
Like that would have been. You're right. It would have been World War III.
Yeah, it would have.
But you know, you did get some media attention. I'm curious, did any of that attention at all add pressure to what you were already sort of dealing with, or did it not really matter?
Wait, can you repeat it again?
You got some media attention at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, again, outside of the ESPN piece you talked about, we're sort mm-hmm. of seeing that stuff just brought up a lot of bad emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, like, did any of that attention add to just the normal pressure you feel as an athlete to perform? Did it add to, did you feel at all, did you feel more comfortable, less comfortable? Like how did sort of coming out affect you as a player? I'm just curious, did it at all?
Yeah. I mean, well, before I came out, if you would ask me then if I was nervous or if it affected me, I would have said no. I'm perfectly fine. You know, I'm good. I'm Kai. I can handle anything in the world. But if you ask me now, it affected me greatly. I was very nervous. I felt like I had the entire trans community on my shoulders, and like, it was a lot, because everyone was trying to use me as a template for what all trans people look
right.
like. At least that's how I felt. And that wasn't the case. You know, I'm like, I'm just one trans person out of millions, you know, who are all around this world. And that was a lot of pressure for me.
Do you think you even really realized at the time that that was happening?
No, I mean, I didn't. I mean, I was so, I mean, no, things were moving so quickly. I barely had time to process, anything else besides basketball. Like I was literally trying to focus on my team, my sport, and while trying to educate all these reporters and people on how I define myself, which, you know, I felt was crazy, because it's like, really, you're making a big deal because I'm using a pronoun? Like, this is a word. It's like saying, oh, okay, I don't know, now, what's somebody? I don't know. Now Chris, you know, Chris Smith wants to be called Christopher Smith. Oh my God, let's do a story. This is crazy.
Shadow Jacinka.
You know, right? Like,
you know, he did get a lot of attention for that, though, too.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, his last name was Numbers. Like,
sure. Spanish Numbers. And not even correct Spanish Numbers. So we could go on. There's multiple layers there.
Exactly. But, like, it's, yeah, you know, it's, yeah.
So here's something else I want to ask you about. And this is one of my sort of pet subjects, which is concussions in sports. And I saw it was reported, and you had talked to the Associated Press at the time. This was back during your junior year at GW. That you had had a pair of concussions that year early in the season, and it actually suffered 8 concussions over the course of your life, I guess, or maybe playing basketball or both. And you had memory problems. Doctors actually told you, look, if you were a football player, we would say your career is over right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like that actually ended your basketball career.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case? And can I ask you, while you had all this other sort of pressure and change on your plate, now you had this too? What was that like?
Yeah. Well, concussions suck. And I didn't have 8. I had 9.
You had 9?
Yeah.
Lord.
Yeah.
Are these all playing basketball or just from doing stuff in life?
I got the first 4 were like when I was younger. And then the remaining ones I got all – throughout college, starting my freshman year. Yeah, it was freshman, sophomore, junior, and then, yeah. So, God, yeah, but it, yeah, it, I mean, it affects my, it affected my, wait, what was the question?
I got it. Right. Do you feel recovered at this point?
Well, do I feel, yes. I mean, I don't have concussion symptoms in terms of like feeling sick or, like light bothering me or sound. Like I'm fine in that respects. I do blank out here and there sometimes, but like if people know that, but if you like remind me of what I said, you know, 5 seconds ago, then usually right. I can pick it back up. But other than that, I mean, I'm fine, you know, my head's good.
What was it like for you though? Then, I mean, was that why you had to stop playing essentially?
Oh yeah. There we go. That was the question. Yeah. So I, yes, I stopped playing basketball because of my concussions. When I got my ninth one, there was a moment when I didn't know who my girlfriend at the time was. I had no idea who she was, and for about 15 minutes. And after that, I was like, oh, wait, never mind. Oh, okay, yeah, now I know who you are. But that experience, it scared the crap out of me. And I didn't think that my life was worth a game.
Right.
And so I made the hardest decision of my life, and that was to not play my senior year because I wanted to live, you know, I wanted to live and remember, you know, who I was and actually experience the rest of my life. Like I was 21 at the time. I'm like, I have a lot more life to live, you know? And so I decided not to play.
You miss hoops? Do you still play at all? Pick up anything like that?
I miss basketball so much. I do. I can barely watch it on TV.
Really?
I watch sports. Yeah, it's difficult.
Well, is it just because you like get the urge to want to go play, or is it just kind of like something?
Yes, absolutely. I'm like, I just want to get in there and just shoot a three in somebody's face, like block a shot, do something. And it's hard, you know, it's so hard to watch, you know, other people play a sport that, you know, I played for so long. But, you know, it's my life.
You don't play casually, a little pickup, something where you can kind of make sure your head's not in harm's way, anything like that?
I mean, I tried playing like a 3-on-3 tournament sometime last year, toward the end of last year. And my... After playing for 12 minutes, only 12 minutes, my head started hurting me.
Oh no!
And I didn't even get hit or anything. I was kind of banging a little bit in the post, but it wasn't anything hard. But I think that my brain is just not like it's just not. You know, I think I've just bruised it too much, or I've hurt it too much or whatever. But I can't really play anymore. I do shoot though.
Sure, but so you have to be sort of careful about like how you exert yourself. It sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm playing tennis now.
And that's okay. No.
Tennis is great. Tennis is great. Yeah.
Interesting. I'm surprised that one is so much better on you than the other. But you know what? The brain is mysterious.
Well, I mean, with basketball, because it's like I play very rough. I mean, clearly nine concussions, but
right.
But no, but like it's with basketball, like you know, like when you're backing someone down, like even that contact, it'll move my head.
It jars you more, yeah.
Yeah. But with tennis, it's like I'm just running, you know, so I'm not really hitting anyone else besides the ball, so that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did want to ask you, and I don't know if this is like an insensitive question or not, but it's something I read from the time, and I was curious. But I think that maybe what we just talked about answers it. You said at the time that you were playing that you were going to put off any testosterone treatments and any possible surgery in order to keep playing basketball. And the NCAA was good with that. And they had sort of thought about it and checked things out and sort of like thought about what makes sense here. And they're like, yes, that makes sense. I was going to ask you how you came to that decision, but it sounds like you just really wanted to play. And that was worth it to you at the time. Am I missing anything there?
I mean, there wasn't really a decision to make because like getting surgery and taking hormones wasn't a priority. It wasn't even a thing. Like I think everyone else, like I said, when you hear transgender, that's what you think of. And so everyone else was like, oh, well, that's what you have to do, right? So when do you want to get that done? I didn't need to get that done. that wasn't even on my to-do list, period. My to-do list was to play basketball, was to graduate, and, you know, live my life. And maybe if I wanted to or if I felt like it, I'd do those things later.
And not have that ticker going in your head all the time, I imagine.
Exactly, right? Exactly. You know, it's get healthy.
This actually leads to our question, which I was reading a discussion you had with tennis player James Blake.
Yes.
Really interesting back and forth. And I don't have the link, but anybody, Google James Blake, Google Kai, and basically – Like, you'll find it. It's a really, really fascinating discussion. And
yeah,
you
the
ex
Huffington
you ex
Post, Huffington Post voice to voice.
Yep,
Google
there you
that.
go. And you explain to him the difference between sex and gender. Can
Yes.
you explain that for our listeners? Because I think it ties into some stuff you were just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of times people think that gender and sex are the same thing for everyone on the planet. That's not the case. Gender is how you self-identify, how you view yourself. It's my body parts. So when I look down and I see my body, that's what I have. That's my sex. So when those two things differ, when my gender, how I see myself, and my sex, the body parts that I have, when those two things are not the same, then that's when you would get transgender. But when both of those things are the same, then that's when you would get cisgender, or biological, you know, male or female or person or whatever you would call it. But gender is how I see myself, and my sex, that's my body parts. Those two things are not the same thing for everyone. That's one thing that's very important to know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably have never heard it that way or really thought about it that way. It makes a lot of sense.
Because they didn't have to, right? Like
right.
you wake up, you live, you're like, oh, this is what I got. This in like when you're born, like you literally have a template of how you live your life.
Right?
Right. You have all the guidelines, and if they match up, cool, I'm not even gonna question it. But for a lot of people like myself, though that template, what? Like, that doesn't make any type of sense. I don't want to be that person. I'm not going to be that person. I'm going to be this person because this makes more sense to me, you know? But yeah, that's the difference.
Gives you a lot more to have to figure out, it sounds like. It's like one more level of figuring stuff out as you grow up, I imagine.
I mean, yeah, you know, I, yes, it's a lot to figure out because like I said, I didn't know what transgender meant until was a freshman in college. You know, I was 18 years of not knowing anything. You know, why couldn't I have been given all these options when I was younger? You know, then maybe not, who knows, but I'm sure that I would have, you know, figured out like, oh, this is who I am. But because we're only given, you know, we're given limited options. It's tough. It's tough.
Now you and Blake actually also talked about transgender athletes transitioning and then competing.
Yes.
So maybe someone played a sport as a man, now they're playing as a woman, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
From just this, I mean, from the standpoint of sort of competitive fairness, from your perspective, how should or shouldn't the sports world try and deal with that? Like, when they're basically trying to figure out who should be competing against who?
How should they do that?
Yeah, is there any what kind of things should be considered, or should nothing be considered? I'm just curious because, you know, right now we've got women's teams, we have men's teams, mixed doubles in tennis, but you don't see, you know, a lot. You don't see like Serena entering the men's draw in Wimbledon. You don't see Roger Federer entering the women's draw. You know, we kind of tend to segregate things out by sex, mostly in sports, not always.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that is really nothing more than the fact that, in general, men tend to be bigger, faster, and stronger just out of, like, you know, more muscle mass, bigger skeletons, things like that. I don't think it necessarily has to do with, you know, sex organs per se.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, where should sports draw or not draw lines with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for having men's teams and women's team. That's fine. Because it's you shouldn't force anyone to have to plan a team that they don't identify as. But you're asking Kai,
Sure.
What are my thoughts on it? I think that you ask the athlete, how do you identify?
Mm-hmm.
Once they tell you, great, you go to this side of the gym, right? So now you identify as being a man, cool, go play with the men. Now you try out. Can you play? If you make the team, great, you make the team. If you can't play, you need to go try out and you need to practice some more. If you identify as a female, great, go play with the females. You try out. If you win, great, you win. If you don't, go practice. If you identify as being genderqueer or gender nonconforming, great, go play on this team, right? It's like for me, I would love to see, you know, those teams, but also have a team that's for people who just great athletes, period. Like,
right.
I don't care whether you're a man. I don't care how you identify at all. I don't care what race you are. I don't care what age you are. I will beat you. I will beat you because I am a competitive athlete. And that's just me, right? I don't think about, oh my God, you know, oh, this is a man, or he's too big, or she's too fast. I don't care. I'm gonna use what I have, and I'm gonna beat you. And I think that's the big thing that we're missing, you know, in this sport. But I do understand. I do get that, you know, certain people have different advantages and disadvantages in sports, but everyone does. That's the great thing about sports. You get to see someone who has an advantage and you think that they're going to win, and then they lose. They lose to someone else who is an underdog that you didn't think could beat them. You know, that's the great thing about sports.
I mean, you do see Steve Nash and Shaquille O'Neal on the same basketball court. So that does speak to you. You can have pretty big physical differences.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that is right? Where gender differences going on.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's different. There's differences everywhere, but that's what makes things so interesting.
How did you go from, you know, when you had to put basketball aside, how did you get, did you know right then, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go into public advocacy. Or did you have to get to a point where you decided, this is what I want to do?
Oh, you mean in terms of doing this? Like,
yeah.
This was never, ever in a million years. I never thought I would be doing this. After I stopped playing basketball, after I graduated from George Washington, I moved to New York. I became a bartender and a personal trainer. And
really?
I did that because I love drinking and I love working out.
So, what did you study at UW?
Fine arts.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I wanted to go to school to be an architect. And so in that time that I moved to New York, the first 6 months of being there, this entire time, you know, I had shut down my social media because it was a little bit too much for me. But after I had graduated, you know, I was in New York, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot I had a Facebook. So I went back on it and I looked at my messages and I had over 25,000 Facebook messages.
25,000?
Yeah, yeah.
Not 100, 1,000.
Yeah, 1,000.
Okay, how do you even start to go through 25,000 messages?
You just start and you go. So I looked through them, and a majority of them were from little kids, you know, as young as six, you know, telling me, thanking me for just coming out. And one person, I'll never forget it, they were like, you know, you saved my life. I no longer feel like killing myself anymore. And this is a 6-year-old little boy. I'm just like, I can't even fathom being that young and wanting to end my life.
That's stunning.
And the second I saw that, I was like, you know what? I need to go talk to this person. I need to go give them a hug. Clearly, you know, me doing this, me sharing my story is doing something positive. It saved this little kid's life. And at that point, I was like, you know what? Why don't I go talk to high schools? And so I tried to talk to high schools. They weren't having it. They're like, no, we don't allow trans people into our school. Basically is what they were saying. And so I went around them, and I didn't go around them, but I ended up going a different route, and that was to, and I reached out to every single college in the country, and I ended up speaking, and doing it that way. People were interested in wanting me to come speak, and that's what began my advocacy. That's what has turned me from being an athlete into an advocate, and the founder of Project I Am Enough.
So. I want to ask you about that, but I'm just really quickly, high schools were saying, no, you can't come.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get feedback as to why that was the case?
It's fear, you know, it's fear. They don't understand, you know, like we've been talking about this whole time. You know, you hear transgender and you assume it's this or that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know me. They didn't know what I was going to come in and talk about. But the good thing is that, you know, since then I have been inside of probably about 20 plus high school classrooms thus far.
And, so it's changing.
No, I got in. Like, no, I'm good at what I do, but I've been in at least with inside of 20 plus classrooms thus far. And every single time it has been nothing but amazing. And now I'm being invited back to those same high schools, because they have seen what I'm talking about and what I talk about with these kids. And it's not about just being transgender. It's not about being, you know, it's not about hormones. It's not about surgery. I talk about acceptance. I talk about love. I talk about respect. I talk about defining yourself. That is a great thing. You know,
I mean, those are pretty much the things that every single high school kid deep down is concerned with. I mean, that's what that time of life is all about.
Yeah, they're universal messages, you know, but again, like it's that fear that, you know, they thought, you know, because I was trans, oh, he's going to come in, he's going to talk about X, Y, and Z, when it's like, no, it's not the case. But I think I've done a pretty good job at showing them that trans people are human. Just because you're scared of that word, you don't understand it, doesn't mean that you have to be afraid of us, or you have to be or fearful of that word your entire life. You know, it's okay to listen and to learn, you know, and to allow trans kids to go and use the right bathroom and to sit and make friends at their school, or to play on their basketball team, or their football team, or whatever. You know, they're just students. They're students, and they all have an identity, and all those identities deserve to be treated with respect.
So, Project I Am Enough, how does this fit in?
How does this fit in?
What is the project? Tell people what are we talking about here, and how does this fit into the message you were just sharing?
Yeah, I mean, it fits in perfectly. I mean, Project I Am Enough is a project dedicated to encouraging self-love. That's all that we do. We always encourage self-love, because everything starts with you. You know, how can me as a trans guy, how can I sit here and expect you to love me or to care about me if I don't love and care about myself? You know, and that extends beyond the trans community. It can be just you. You know what I mean? You as just a person in your everyday life. But this project is all about self-love, giving back, sharing stories, changing the world, and encouraging people to love and respect themselves while encouraging other people to do the same.
So we're running short on time here, but before we go, mm-hmm. tell people where they can find you online, if they want to bring you as a speaker. If they just want to learn more about you, if they want to contact you, if they want to be messaged 25,001 on Facebook, whatever the case is, how do people find you online?
If you want to find me, just type in my name, www.kaialams.com, and you will find everything you need to know.
And for people who are listening, that's A-L-L-U-M-S.
First name,
K-Y-E, Kai Alums. Hey, I've got one of those weird last names, so... It's been botched so many times. I'm especially sensitive. I'm part of that tribe.
Yes.
The non-phonetic last name tribe. we need some understanding too.
Right.
I'm just kidding. But look, it's been great having you on. I actually have learned quite a bit. And I hope to have you back. Like I said, this has been one of the best podcasts I've had so far. But like I said, run on time. So for now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's been Kyle Alums. I'm Patrick Ruby. What's that?
No, I was going to say, I'm on February 3rd at 8 p.m. I'm actually going to do a Google Hangout with other trans athletes. And I'm also inviting Caleb Hannon and anyone else from Grantland to do it. And so if, you know, stay tuned. I think that I would love to come back and talk about that as well.
That'd be fascinating. I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah, it should be good.
Well, look, I'm sorry. I was signing off before you got that in. That was good.
It's okay.
You're a more polished speaker than I am. So. You have more practice.
It's practice. Yeah, right?
It's practice. Cool. I don't even want to talk about like a turnaround jump shot, because I'm sure you'd kill me there too.
Oh, but... I would. I would kill you.
So for now, that has been Kai Alums. I'm Patrick Ruby for Sports on Earth. And as always, I'm saying goodbye, Ruby Tuesday.